Okay, so we'll conclude with very short 1 minute, another one less than 1 minute, questions about slides.
All right. Well, you already got a bit of a hint from Marusha's talk earlier. I'm Ben Kane. I do flexion analysis for lensing stuff with clusters. My poster is all the way in the back of the courtyard, so come by and see it. It mainly highlights a new forward modeling parametric approach to measuring flexion that's slightly different from what's already out there in the literature as far as shapelets and moment approaches. And so I think it's really cool. We apply it to ABEL 1689 and measure some mass structure, and very cool. So come by, check it out.
Hey, I'm Tracy Clark, and I'm talking about ABEL 2256. That's the poster right here when you come in from the courtyard. It was already shown yesterday by Christoph. It's a major merging cluster. The plot over here is an XMM image showing two cold clumps falling into the cluster. We have large regions of diffuse synchrotron emission, radio halo that's a megaparsec radio relic as well. And what I want to highlight here is there's a lot of steep spectrum radio sources in this cluster that are tracing the merger activity. As we go to the next generation of low frequency instruments, the sky around clusters is going to light up with these low frequency radio relics that'll be tracing the merger signatures in these clusters.
Hi, I'm Will Dawson. I'm from UC Davis. Fortunately, Marusha went into why cluster major mergers in the transverse plane of the sky are important. And we've discovered a new one in the deep lens survey. It's a little bit difficult to see here, but please come by and look at the poster. There are two galaxy density clumps at the same redshift of 0.53. We were fortunate that this over our deep lens survey overlapped with the SZA survey. And here in red you see the SZA contours offset from the weak lensing mass map, which was suggestive of a major post-merger. We followed it up with Chandra X-ray observations and found the 9.1 sigma major gas clump in between these two, confirming the major merger picture. But what I particularly like about this is we're seeing a new phase, roughly 2 to 4 times greater than any of these other similar systems.
I'm Jörg Dietrich from the University of Michigan. We have been seeing large-scale structure filaments in the galaxy distribution for over 30 years now, but they're more elusive in X-ray and in weak lensing. We believe we have a significant detection of a weak lensing filament, so a dark matter bridge connecting the two main components of the supercluster, ABEL 222 and ABEL 223. Turns out that this matter overdensity connecting these two clusters is aligned with the galaxy overdensity and with soft X-ray emission that Norbert Werner found, whose properties also match the expectations of the hottest component of the warm-hot intergalactic medium. If I had more time, I'd tell you a little bit about our heroic efforts to constrain the gas fraction in that filament, so you'll have to see me out there at the poster, which is right at the entrance from the courtyard. Thank you.
Here you go. Hi, my name is René Fassbender from MPE in Garching, and there's a very good reason to have a close look at my poster. Because it's certainly the most expensive poster on display here. I spent $86 to get it printed here. And besides that, I'm reporting on the progress of finding and studying high redshift X-ray luminous clusters. Here's a little gallery of some of our new systems all the way out to redshift 1.6. Now we have 18 systems above redshift 1 and 30 above redshift 0.8, all spectroscopically confirmed. Here in this box is results of a new study of very detailed study of a massive system at redshift 1 with cosmological applications as a comparison of 13 mass estimates derived for this cluster and also a wide range of astrophysical applications. There's a beautiful central merging going on here, and there's even some extended radio emission detected. And in the final box, the final box summarizes our progress at redshift 1.5 and beyond. Thanks.
Hi there. I'm Paul Giles from the University of Bristol. And my poster is split into two sections. We have the X-ray properties of clusters from of a sample of 35 clusters selected from the BCS and EBCS samples. We have Chandra observation of these clusters. We perform a mass analysis on the most relaxed clusters and construct scaling relations between observables and mass, and then compare the mass analysis to weak lensing masses. And on the right, we have Chandra observations of a sample of weak lensing selected clusters. And we have overlays of X-ray contours and weak lensing contours on Subaru weak lensing clusters. And we construct scaling relations for a sample of these clusters.
Hi, my name is Fu Lai Guo. This is one summary slide of my poster, which is located in the courtyard. And this is about our recent paper on the formation of X-ray cavities. And let's first look at the left image. This is a Chandra X-ray image of the Perseus cluster. We have seen this image a few times yesterday. And in fact, this is one of the strongest evidence for aging feedback operating in cluster cool cores. You can clearly see two X-ray cavities near the cluster center, and another one slightly at larger radius. One interesting feature is that these cavities seem to rise brilliantly in the intercluster medium. How do we know this? Because near the very cluster center, the cavity is quasi-spherical. At a slightly larger radius, they tend to be elongated in the tangential direction. This is one typical signature of brilliant rising. However, in numerical simulations of thermal jets, the picture is very different. So here I show one of typical jet simulation we have done. And this is a thermal jet. You can see the left panel is at time t equal to 10 million years. This is the time when we turn off the jet. And the right panel shows the time at t equal to 70 million years. Oh, sorry. And I just mentioned this is a big problem. So the solution to the problem is probably the jets are much, much lighter. And their power are dominated by cosmic rays. And the last thing I want to say is this jet event don't only happen in clusters. They probably also happen in our galaxy. So please check out our new paper on the Fermi bubbles.
All right, I'm Julie Lachiclarondo. I'm a second year PhD student at the University of Cambridge. And so I've been working for the past couple of months on this particular object here, 4C55. One of the interesting things about this object, so it's a radio galaxy embedded in a cool core cluster. And what we see here in the X-ray, so this is a very deep image, 100 kiloseconds, what we see here is a plume. And this plume, which happens to be going along one of the cavities, is actually pretty metal rich. And when you, what we think is going on is that this plume is being dragged out by the X-ray bubble. And one of the interesting things is that if you fit spectral models to this plume, you find that it's actually more consistent with being enriched by solar-like abundances. And so this means that both supernova type 1A and supernova type 2 contribute to the enrichment, which is in contradiction to the more general view that we think of, supernova type 1A, that they are the only ones that contribute. So it's quite interesting. So please come and see my poster.
My name is Hui Li from Los Alamos. So this is a poster on magnetic fields in galaxy clusters. We explore the idea that during the formation of a cluster, you have an AGN early on at Z3, and how that AGN magnetic fields serve as a seeds that's amplified by the turbulence in the ICM that gradually spread out throughout the whole cluster. So we use ENSO MHD codes and simulate a large number of clusters. This is a set of runs where we use one cluster, but different AGN energy differ by about 1,000 in initial energy, but they all saturate within about a factor of 3 of the final magnetic field energy. There's another set of runs where we did a large number of clusters with different masses. It looks like the final magnetic energy scales as m squared. And we also did synthetic images for Faraday rotation measures who can compare with observations. So if you're a fan of magnetic fields, AGNs, or turbulence, or clusters, you're welcome to come and talk about us.
I'm CJ Ma, and a postdoc looking for it. Brian McNamara and Paul Newman at CFA and University of Waterloo. And I believe that you have heard a lot about this work yesterday from Brian's talk. And I think that the most important thing I need to say, I mean, in this 1 minute, is this poster is just located outside the door of this floor, because it is difficult to find. So, I mean, if you want to know the details, then come to look at it. So the idea is we try to calculate the average energy from AGN bubbles that deposit into the intercrustal medium, and the result, as we found, is it's comparable to the energy required during the preheating. And during this conference, I just learned that we probably need more energy because the energy, this energy are injected into the intercrustal medium at lower redshift. But I think that's okay, and because, I mean, originally I thought that the energy we found in this AGN outburst is too much, that we need to cool down somewhere. So, okay.
Hi, I'm Brian O'Shea from Michigan State University, and my poster is on looking at radio relics and galaxy clusters using, again, the ENSO, using the ENSO AMR code. And so the two things that I'd like to point out is that we're studying large populations of galaxy clusters within big simulations. And so one of the things that we can do is look at galaxy cluster, essentially radio power as a function of mass. And we see these nice mass functions. Which are nothing, you know, not nearly as tight as X-ray relationships, for reasons that you'll learn about when you see my poster. And then over here, we're looking at an overlay of X-ray luminosity with the 1.4 gigahertz radio emission in the contours. And this is sort of an interesting thing that we're doing with an MHD version of ENSO, and it produces radio emission that looks very, very similar to what's actually seen, in the real world.
Hello, I'm Jeremy Sanders. My poster is about extending previous work using high spectral resolution X-ray spectroscopy to measure the temperature distribution in the cores of galaxy clusters. This is to understand feedback. Previously, we found very wide temperature distributions all the way down to 0.5 kV or so in very hot clusters. So what we've done is to make a stacked analysis. This is 1.2 megaseconds of observations of temperatures less than 1 kV, and for the first time we've discovered oxygen 7 emission from these objects, measuring temperatures down to 0.35 kV or so. The amount of this material is about a quarter to an eighth, so that's expected for radiative cooling, so there is cold material, but much less than you'd expect. And what's really interesting as well is that the nitrogen to oxygen abundance ratios from this stacked spectrum implies there's around 4 times solar metallicity for this material.
Hi, I'm John Sievers from CETA. So this is really a taste of things to come in the SC. People have been talking quite a bit about how we'd love greater SC data, more resolution, more dynamic range and scales, and we'll have to wait for CCAT. Well, that's not true. So here are some data from A1689 from 5 different arrays. CBI, CBI2, and then Dan Maroney and John Carlson were kind enough to share SCA over and BIMA data that have been sitting around. So we have actually good signal noise over an angular range of about a factor of 30 on this cluster. And one of the nice things, subject came up earlier, people, radio astronomers can look at UV plots. So this is a UV plot. It's basically the Fourier transform of the cluster. And you can see with the CBI data, basically we're getting to the edge of the cluster, and you can see the total thermal content. And that's just because these visibilities are flat. So we'll be able to do, there's more archival data we can do this sort of stuff on. And coming up, things like combination of Planck and the karma array with all the dishes being correlated, we'll be able to do, in this range, much better sensitivity. And also, you should talk to Tony Marchowski about a proposed instrument if you want really good SEA data, that you don't have to wait a year for SEA data. You don't have to wait a year for that, 2 years for that, not until CCAT.
Hello, I'm Kawa Wong. And that the density in the cluster outer region is very low, and particles should not have enough time to be in collisional equilibrium. So I studied two non-equilibrium processes in cluster outer region. The first one is the non-equilibrium ionization process, that is the NEI process. If they are not in if they are in non-equilibrium ionization, I found that the surface brightness in X-ray can be order of magnitude higher than that of the equilibrium model. that may be confused by the, to the clumping effects we will talk about. Also, I find that IXO may be able to test the NEI model. If you look at my poster, I will show you the details. The other effect is the non-equipartition effects, and this affects the SZ people more. And I find that if they measure the cosmological parameter, such as the dark energy equation of state, that may be biased by 10%, something like
that. Hi, I'm Fabio Dondanel. I wrote two posters, so I guess I got 2 minutes. The first poster is about gamma rays in galaxy cluster due to dark matter. So as you know, about 80% of the matter in a cluster is in form of dark matter, so they should be considered the prime targets for dark matter and red searches. So we usually hear a cosmological constraint simulation from CLUES to produce all sky maps of the dark matter decay annihilation gamma rays. So we then run Fermi satellite 5-year observation simulations to see what the satellite could be able to do. Doing that, we can consider the real background, galactic and extragalactic, as measured by the Fermi collaboration in those 2 years. So main results are that Fermi could detect extragalactic dark matter gamma ray signal from nearby galaxy cluster like Virgo, Coma, and Perseus in the case of decaying dark matter, while the case of annihilation in this world, unless very high boost factor are considered. Well, I want to say that we make available online the dark matter density and density squared all sky maps to use in FIT formats. Many people participate to that work, to this work, and many of them are here today. So the other part is about the gamma ray observation of the Perseus galaxy cluster. MAGIC is a ground-based instrument that observes gamma rays above approximately 50 GeV. And we observed the Perseus cluster of about 25 hours during fall 208 with the first of those two telescopes that you see, and in search of gamma rays coming from the cosmic ray hadronic interaction with intercluster medium, as Christoph explained yesterday. So we did not detect anything above 80 GeV, and we are in agreement with Pinsky and Frommer predictions. And the only thing we could do was to constrain the average cosmic ray to thermal pressure of the cluster of a few percent. So now MAGIC is a two-system telescope and that permits stereoscopic observation, which improved quite a lot the performances. And we are observing in stereo mode the cluster since fall 2009. And we have quite some data now. We already detected the central galaxy, NGC 1275, and EC310 that was before undetected in gamma rays. And we will be soon able to probe those models with the stereo observation. Thanks.
All right, let's thank all of our posters. We are up for lunch now. The next session starts at 1:45. If you haven't been to the beach, you can go left and get to the beach, but it's a little bit faster to go right. It's one of the nicer parts of Santa Barbara.